Welcome to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up in today's program.
Gerrymandering has been with us since the very beginning. And so the issues in states like Oregon and everywhere are, how do you deal with it? Do you deal with it? What are the impacts? All of those kinds of things.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente, kp.org, Lane Community College, lanecc.edu, Peace Health, peacehealth.org, the University of Oregon, uoregon.edu, and generous support from Lane County and the City of Eugene. And here's today's program.
Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's March 11th, 2022 program, Redistricting Oregon Style. I'm Katie Piercy, and I'm the City Club President, and proud to be so. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Speakers for today's program, we're proud to welcome, for Redistricting Oregon Style, Jim Moore, Independent Analyst and Political Outreach Director, Pacific University, Tom McCall Center for Civic Engagement. Biographical information on our speaker is available at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. I'd like to thank Sandra Bishop for coordinating today's program, and here she is to do the introductions.
Thank you. Good afternoon. It's my pleasure today to introduce our speaker and a little bit about the topic. Our speaker is an expert in the political process, and he's also a historian. He's not an expert in keeping tabs on our local politics, so we may need to take some of his expertise, comments, and observations, and apply it to some of our local situations. All the political boundaries in the state, from Congress on down to legislative and local jurisdictions, have the potential to be adjusted during this 10-year assessment of population shifts that we know as redistricting. Here in Oregon, there's a lot of excitement about the state gaining a new congressional district. Everyone that follows politics or understands how influential our long-term Congressperson Peter DeFazio has been is anticipating what's going to happen with Oregon's influence at the national level after such a transition. And this is only one of many small transitions. We're looking at state, we're looking at local, a lot of different things are going to change because of the redrawing of the political boundaries. In Congress, we'll have a new inexperienced representative taking the open congressional seat. And throughout Oregon, the districts will be configured with some very interesting consequences. Our speaker today, Jim Moore, teaches politics at Pacific University in Forest Grove. And I want to thank Jim for taking time in his busy schedule to be with us today. We were lucky to have Jim's insights on these issues that are coming up during the redistricting. Jim Moore is the Political Outreach Director at Pacific University in the Tom McCall Center for Civic Engagement. Since 1990, many of you have probably heard and seen Jim as an independent political analyst in the Portland area. He's also the elections analyst for KATU Television in Portland, and also an analyst for a Portland radio station. And he works closely with a number of regional outlets and newspapers and several national media enterprises. He's also working on a biography of Victor Atiyah. Vic Atiyah was Oregon's last Republican governor. He served from 1979 to 1987. And he broke some other barriers, which I will let Jim reveal in his book. We can see how each of our votes has the potential to and actually does influence matters of state. And when I was thinking about this, I also thought about the image of casting a pebble into a pond. The ripples or waves, depending on how large the pebble or stone is that's cast, those ripples emanate out and can change the political tide, as we saw in the 2016 election, more like a tsunami rather than a ripple in a small pond. And so with the changes in every election this year, those changes will very likely be amplified by how the redistricting was done. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Jim Moore. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome to all of you. Redistricting. So what I'm going to do is give you a bit of a context of it, a little bit of history, and then we'll look at Oregon this year, because Oregon this year is fascinating. Just to start out and kind of ruin some of the surprise, Oregon was actually the first state to get all of its redistricting done, even with all the challenges that happened in courts and things like that. We were leading the pack in the entire country in getting our redistricting done. So with all those challenges, we actually were more efficient than other places. So redistricting itself, it harkens back to the way Great Britain ran its government. But when the U.S. Constitution was written, the U.S. Constitution has right in it that every 10 years there's going to be a census, and from that census, they're going to allocate the number of seats that are available to states for the U.S. House. And so when every state became a member of the United States, they echoed that. They also said, aha, this 10-year census, we'll do the same thing in our own states and allocate these seats. So we're allocating them by land. Remember, every state gets two senators, so that's by land, and then every state gets its portion of House members, that's also by land, the boundaries of the state. There are no rules that say you have to have actual districts in a state. The rules simply say you're going to get this many House members. But states pretty much early on decided that they would create districts, and so the districts have to equal more or less in population. And the states then put that into place for their own state legislatures on down to the city level, where you draw districts for city councils and things like that. Now, the reason I focus on the fact that it's land is there are other countries that do not have just land as a basis for redistricting. They, for instance, look at one house in a national legislature or a state legislature might be for people who represent organizations. And those organizations aren't physically necessarily in a single place, but they also have representation. And so they would look every 10 years or whatever their cycle is and say, aha, who should be a member of the organizations group that sits in effect in a third house in our government that's out there? So the land is something that basically reflects what the reality was in the 1700s. We're still living with it here today, many, many, many years later. Now, when you do the divisions up by district, by population, also very early on, people figured out, aha, I can do this if I'm in power so that my political party will have an advantage with the way the districts are drawn. So every district can have equal population, but I can make it so that, for instance, more people of my party are in several districts and people of the opposition party are in fewer districts. And so we get the word gerrymandered. It comes from a governor back in the good old days, Elbridge Gerry, pronounced with a hard G, who led one of these efforts. You can go online and find the political cartoon that was made of it. It basically looks like a Greek person bird that's hulking over the state. The person who drew the cartoon thought Elbridge Gerry was being a bit unethical. But gerrymandering has been with us since the very beginning. And so the issues in states like Oregon and everywhere are, how do you deal with it? Do you deal with it? What are the impacts? All of those kinds of things. When we get to the 20th century, the big issues were not just political parties, but the big issues became race. And so there's a whole host of rules at the state level and at the national level on what you can take into account when you divide up your political entities into districts by population. Basically, race can be taken into account if you can show that the districts are basically there to exclude members of a race from having equal representation according to the population. So if you have, for instance, pretty common in a lot of Southern states, a population of blacks that is, say, 30%, but the way the districts are set up basically says only about 10% of the seats in a legislature will go to black members, then the federal rules and federal courts have said you can adjust those districts based on race in order to get better representation for the members of that community. So race is in there, it has some pretty particular rules, but it can be taken into account. And the big thing then is political party. And everybody says, no, you can't take political party into account, but everybody always puts it in, and it becomes an issue as it did in Oregon. The new districts favoring one party or the other. It's not exactly subtle, but it doesn't break any of the rules that we have out there quite yet, but it raises a whole host of issues. So when we look at the issues when you create new districts, there's two main things to pay attention to. First of all, the districts will match whatever the decision is of the political entity. So for instance, in Oregon, the districts are determined by the legislature. It passes a law, it has to pass the Senate, it has to pass the House, and then it has to be signed off by the governor. So, and every state will have a slightly different take on how they do that, but every state will have that legitimacy to create the new boundaries, whatever they are. In a state like Oregon, it's actually fairly rare in the 20th and going into the 21st century that the governor and the legislature agree on what those lines are. So there's always a fallback in every state. In Oregon, the fallback for the state legislative districts is it goes to the Secretary of State to make the decisions. For the congressional districts, it used to go to federal judge, but now we have a panel of judges that basically looks at the legitimacy of those congressional districts. But every state will have that. Now, when you do this, the assumption by the people who set up the boundaries is that we have basically cemented in our advantage, which you may or may not have, and the reason is very simple. Demographics change. People move into districts, people move out of districts. And so we'll get to a bit of data from Oregon here in a bit. If you're in a place where the population is changing rapidly, when you set up that district in the beginning of a decade, by two or three election cycles in, the demographics may have changed, so what you assumed would happen isn't happening anymore. That could be party change, it can be different ethnicities moving in or out, all those kinds of things. So there's an assumption that these kind of lock things in, but when demographic change happens rapidly, things can change, and what you assumed would happen doesn't happen. So that's an important thing to keep in mind. So with all of this, with the political nature of setting up these districts, a lot of states, and this goes back in big time about 20, 25 years, have thought we need to set up a non-political way to set up the districts. And so a lot of them have come up with commissions. And the commissions are supposed to be nonpartisan. They make decisions that are binding, and everybody in the political world has to live with them. There are over 25 of them in the United States now, but what we discovered in this particular redistricting cycle that we're in right now, more than half of them have built-in politics into them, and they're actually failing and actually favoring one party over another, or they can be vetoed by the people who sit in positions of power who want their map to be in there instead of someone else's map. So the commission system is a great idea, but getting it right is really, really difficult. To keep in mind, here in Oregon, we do not have a commission system. There have been several efforts to get one before the people. They have a hard time getting signatures for a variety of reasons. I assume that we're gonna see one of these commissions come before us as a ballot measure, because the legislature certainly isn't gonna create it. They're the ones in the cat seat right now making the boundaries. So watch for that to come down the pike, but it's gotta be done right, or it just is another form of partisan power as we look at things, okay? Now, one more thing before we get to Oregon stuff. Fascinating bit of analysis in the New York Times just this morning. They've looked at the redistricting going on for Congress across the country, and they have found that the Republican states that are basically gerrymandering, so Republicans will win more congressional seats, are almost exactly balanced by Democratic states like New York that are gerrymandering to get more Democrats in. So their estimate at the New York Times right now is that the kind of built-in states and congressional seats across the country are going to be about 216 to 218 for both parties. 218 is a majority. It basically means kind of the way the districts are set up, we may have a perfectly even split between Republicans and Democrats built into the system. That'll change as demographics shift because of incumbency and a variety of other things. But it, what we thought would be a tremendous Republican advantage with redistricting this year turns out to be almost an exact wash as we're looking at it right now. So just it's a fascinating set of puzzles. All 50 states doing this, they don't coordinate. It gets really strange out there. So let's go to Oregon. So Oregon, once again, you got to pass the law, and it's pretty common for the governor and the legislature to disagree, even if they're of the same party. Even if they're the same party. That did not happen 10 years ago, and it did not happen this year, where they agreed and the legislative maps became the actual districts that we have. In 2021, we had a fascinating mix of things. First of all, in the last 10 years, our demographics shifted a lot, and especially among voters. So remember, the census is whoever lives there, but the political world wants to look at who's registered to vote and then what party they are and did they turn out and all those other kinds of things. So 10 years ago, we look at Oregon elections, Oregon registered voters, about 41.5% of registered voters were Democrats, about 32% were registered Republicans, and unaffiliated voters were about 20.5%. So there were Democrats, more or less 10% less, Republicans, more or less 10% less unaffiliated. Here we are 10 years later, and the unaffiliated have gone from 20.5% to 33.5% of all registered voters. That group has expanded dramatically. Republicans went from 32% down to about 25% of registered voters. Democrats went from 41.5% down to about 35% of registered voters. There's change happening out there. The real numbers are startling. The number of Democrats increased by 166,000. The number of Republicans increased by 67,000. That's almost a 3-to-1, definitely a 2.5-to-1 margin of Democrats increasing more quickly than Republicans. The number of unaffiliated voters went up by 560,000, dwarfs the other two. In fact, if you take out the Republicans from that 565,000 of unaffiliated, you'd only go down to 500,000. The Republicans are almost a rounding error when you look at the size of the increase of the number of unaffiliated voters that have come into the system in the last decade. So here's the problem Oregon faced. How do you make districts that take into account the unaffiliated voters? The second big problem Oregon faces is if you take out the unaffiliated voters and the 7% of everybody else who's registered as a minor party, and you just look at Democrats and Republicans, it's about 60% Democrats and about 40% Republicans. And you know what? When you look at our legislature, it's about 60% Democrats and about 40% Republicans. It looks like our legislature pretty much matches the way our party registration is if we take out all of those unaffiliated voters. But Republicans are going through a time of change, and they're trying to figure out, are they what they call a rural party? Are they a suburban party? Who are they? And the leadership has decided that they're more rural than not. Here's what happens when you look at the map of Oregon. 50% of all Republicans live in the Portland metropolitan three counties, in Marion County and Lane County. Those five counties have 50% of all the Republicans in the state. About 40% of all Republicans live just in the Portland metropolitan area. But Democrats way outnumber them in the Portland metropolitan area and are doing pretty well against them in Lane County. Marion County, it's pretty much even. So how do you draw districts that give representation to where the bulk of Republicans are living in these larger population counties, but in places where there are so many more Democrats that you couldn't gerrymander a district that would have more Republicans in it, because Republicans and Democrats all live together, they're all mixed up. So that's a big problem. How do you solve that? So it went to the legislature, and the Republicans said, aha, we've got a solution. And the Democrats said, we have a solution. And the Republican solution was pretty simple. We want to oversample so that our 40% in registered voters is actually 50% plus in terms of representation. And Republican or Democrats looked at it and said, aha, we want to oversample so that our 60%, when you look at it, we actually get about 65 to 70% representation. So they both wanted to oversample. To make all this even more fun, we had a Census Bureau that wasn't functioning very well because of COVID and because the Trump administration decided it wanted to change the way the Census Bureau actually worked, how it counted people, how it gave its results. A second thing, which is fascinating and really fun to play with, there's now easily available software so people like you and me can go and do our own redistricting. In fact, the state of Oregon, the legislature put the software, actual software they were using, available for anybody online. You could use it, you could come up with districts, you could submit it to say, hey, here's my idea, take it into account, let's see what happens. So we had challenges to actually counting things, and then we had more public access than we've ever had to what the district boundaries ought to actually look like. So the net result in Oregon, we did not have any neutral proposals. We had a Republican one and a Democratic one. The Republican one seemed to be, to me, the more egregious one, because they were asking for a lot more than their representation would suggest. But it also wasn't going to go anywhere because the Republicans don't have a majority in either house, and the Republicans don't have the governorship. And so the Democrats came up with theirs. That's fine. It was challenged, and the challenges on the congressional side were fascinating. So we got this new district. We got a sixth district, first time in 40 years, and about every 40 years is when we get a district. And so there was a lot made out of one of the districts that was redrawn. So it went from the southern Portland suburbs down into the Willamette Valley, over the Cascades to Bend. And so there was a Republican suit filed against that. And one of the main arguments it talked about was, in the winter, it'll be hard for that district to be won because you can't get over the mountains all the time in the winter. And I looked at that and thought, well, that's a very interesting argument. First of all, it seems to me it was a slap in the face to Les Schwab, the tire company, which has made its fortune in getting people tires so they can get over the mountains in the winter. But secondly, Oregon has had, during its long time as a state, it's had congressional districts that cross over the mountains for more than half of those decades. There's been one for the last several elections, decades we've been. It's the second congressional district. All of Eastern Oregon crosses the Cascades, goes over to Oregon, goes to Grants Pass. It's still doing that with the new map. A second thing that really jumped out to me was the person who filed the suit was a guy named Sean Lindsay. Sean used to serve in the state legislature. When he was there in 2011, he was one of the co-authors of the map at that point that was approved by the legislature and then signed by the governor. And one of the districts that Sean was quite happy to have in there was a house district in Southern Oregon that goes from the Medford suburbs over the Cascades and went out to Lakeview. And then it was redone, so it kept all of that and then went up towards Bend. So apparently in the southern part of the state, it's okay to have districts that cross the Cascades, but not in the northern part of the state. it made no sense to me whatsoever. When it went to the court system, the federal judges actually appointed somebody to be what they call a master to hear debate on all this and make decisions. And they looked at all that and said, you know, the Democrats, yeah, did fudge things in the new map, but they didn't fudge them enough that they broke Oregon law. And so we're keeping the new map. And that happened with the state legislative districts as well. So what do we have now? We have 6 congressional districts. One of them is basically guaranteed Republican. 2 of them are basically guaranteed Democrat. And the other 3 lean to Democrat. So instead of what we ought to have if it was more neutral, which would be 4 Democratic districts and 2 Republican districts, we're going to have 5 and 1 most likely. We got elections coming up. These are new districts. So we'll see how it all plays out. But just counting the number of registered voters in the districts, that's what it looks like. Remember, the Republican proposal would have given them 3 congressional districts to 3 Democratic districts, so way overrepresented them. Democrats overrepresent themselves. That's where we are. In the legislature itself, it's hard to figure out exactly what's going on because the Secretary of State has not updated the actual registration numbers for the new districts yet. We have some of them, but we don't have all of them. They're not on the Secretary of State's page where you can kind of download them all and say, oh, there we go. I can do the math. We can figure it out. But it looks to me like the state legislature is not going to move much just in terms of Democrats and Republicans. Just overall, there is over a third of the seats in the House will actually be new people, and that's the best time for the opposition party to win seats when there's no incumbent. The Senate, we're getting close to that 30% number of people who are running for other things or not going to run for re-election. So there's a lot of opportunity here for Republicans, but it looks to me just at first glance like that the Republicans are still going to be in the minority, Democrats are still going to be in the majority, which matches the registration numbers across the entire state. Now, you and Eugene are at the point where you're looking at the local boundaries, and I'm up here in Washington County. We're looking at local boundaries as well. Those are beginning to shift and change. Washington County, where I am, has been one of the fastest growing parts of the state, it and Deschutes County with the Bend area. And the boundaries here are changing pretty radically because population has been so, the growth has been so strong up here. And so we'll see how that all plays out. But once again, the lines, even at the local level up here, look like they're not going to change who sits on city councils or who sits on county commissions, those kinds of things. So we've gotten through all of this. Is it fair? No. Are there better ways to do it? Yes. Are they easy to implement? Heck no. Are people going to pay attention to this next year? No, they aren't. People forget this until it comes up again when we have the next census. So the Oregon way of redistricting kind of looks like the partisan way that other parts of the country do, not quite as bad as states like Texas or New York, but whoever the majority party is uses their advantage. And that's been the way it has been forever here in Oregon. The ideas for going to something like a nonpartisan commission are out there, but they really haven't gotten beyond the idea stage to going out and saying, let's actually implement something, a ballot measure or whatever it takes to get these to go before the people. And so that's where we sit. That's where we sit. Oregon doesn't look that different from the rest of the country. One last thing to leave you with, because you're in Peter DeFazio country. When the Trump administration delayed things and COVID delayed things and the numbers were finally released to the states, there was an opportunity, especially in the Oregon House, because a deal had been made with the Speaker of the House at the time, Tina Kotek. She said, our redistricting committee will be half Republicans and half Democrats. We're not going to give the edge to the Democrats, even though they have the majority. And so there was a chance that we could have gotten a fairly neutral congressional map out of that committee, probably along the lines of 2 Republican seats to 4 Democratic seats. But what happened was as we started pushing on that, it quickly became clear that the Republicans' response was not going to be, oh, let's come up with a neutral map. They both went into their partisan corners and they said, Republicans, we want strong overrepresentation. Democrats, we want strong overrepresentation. And the Democrats won the fight. At the national level, this is where Peter DeFazio comes in, both Peter DeFazio and Kurt Schrader from the district north of you, very clearly said that they favored a 5-to-1 map. And the reason they favored it was very clear. They're looking at a narrow Democratic majority in the House of Representatives right now, and they didn't want Oregon, in effect, to give up one of those Democratic seats with our new 6th district or the way new borders were. So they said, keep it strong, Democrat, because that's the only way that we stay in the majority back here in Washington, D.C. So there was a collision of interest between the national representatives and the state representatives, and the national representatives won that argument. The Democrats in the Oregon legislature, especially the Oregon House, said, yep, we agree with that. We're going to draw the maps that favor Democrats. So just a fascinating political science-y thing, collision between the representatives at two different levels.
If you enjoyed this presentation by the City Club of Eugene, please visit our website at cityclubofeugene.org or our YouTube channel and our social media pages.